The sound of this doorbell may seem pretty ordinary to you, until you realize that it's Graham, who's 75 years old and still delivering meals to people in need in his neighborhood. And that for many of them, it's the most comforting sound they'll hear all day. Seniors bring so much to Quebec. Let's recognize their contribution. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
From Turtle Island to Palestine, occupation is a crime. Free, free Palestine! You're listening to Radio Free Palestine.
Welcome everyone, you are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Stay tuned.
Be him. البحر لني أودعهم لقيتهم سفر والريح مطاوعهم ناديت رئيس المركب لحتى يرجعهم هدول أحبابي راحوا مفتاح القلب معهم ليا وليا وليتي ليا على ليا ليا وليا وليتين ليا على ليا ليا وليا وليتين ليا
Hello and welcome to the CJPME Debrief Podcast, a project of Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East and a proud member of the Harbinger Media Network. Together, we discuss developments and issues in Canada's relationship with Palestine and the broader Middle East. Through our conversations, we make sense of events in the region and how people in Canada can respond. Today, we're doing a lobby roundup in which we analyze content from pro-Israel groups in Canada. In this episode, we'll discuss some of the recent outrageous claims, assertions, campaigns, and complaints of pro-Israel lobby group B'nai B'rith Canada. We'll start with B'nai B'rith's ridiculous announcement suggesting that the Canadian government is falling over itself to fund anti-Semitic NGOs at home and abroad. Next, we'll turn to a story from B'nai B'rith where they are literally trying to police the Facebook likes of Montreal city councillors. Following that, we'll take some time to look at B'nai B'rith's report, which supposedly debunks the whole raison d'etre of the UN's Commission of Inquiry on Palestine and Israel. And finally, we touch on a story from B'nai B'rith Canada, where they claim that the U of T Graduate Student Union has suffered a humiliating defeat for holding firm in support of BDS. Smoke and mirrors? You bet. My name is Tom Woodley. I'm the president of CJPME and the podcast host for today. With me is Michael Buchert, CJPME's vice president and our podcast co-host. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Tom.
So we've got a few stories that we're going to talk about. This is something that you and I have been mulling over for a few months, sure, doing these reaction or these roundup podcasts. So it's exciting to get the first one going, huh?
Yeah, I think it's good to spend a little bit of time on these things every once in a while because these pro-Israel groups are so active and, you know, they have such close connections with a lot of politicians and they're quite influential. And yeah. Yet a lot of their activities are absolutely outrageous or absurd and deserve to be mocked or at least called attention to. So I think this is something that we'll try to do every once in a while to just highlight a couple of, you know, what the pro-Israel groups are up to so that you're better informed.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing that always strikes me with these things, whether it's B'nai B'rith Canada or the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs or Honest Reporting Canada, so-called Honest Reporting Canada, is that quite often, you know, you see the headlines, you think, oh my God, you know, did someone actually do that? Or wow, what a defeat or what a victory. And then you dig into it and there's nothing there. And mm-hmm. And I think that's what, and quite often that's quite often how they work. And I think over the course of podcasts like this and other podcasts, roundup, lobby roundup podcasts that we do, we'll end up telling some stories about how they basically misuse language. They ambiguate, they misinform, they disinform, they exaggerate, all these different things. And it's just good to sort of call that out once in a while. And let's face it, what these stories that we've chosen here today are just random. They just happen to be sort of some of the recent stories. There's nothing particularly notable about these. They just come out. So I guess the first one we want to talk about was one where, I guess it was actually today, March 8th, B'nai B'rith announced that there's an important campaign. Community leaders launch petition to stop government funding to anti-Semitic NGOs. They make it sound like there's this sort of massive problem with the Canadian federal government of sort of funding anti-Semitic NGOs. What do you think?
Yeah, there's a lot to say about this. I mean, this is a press release basically announcing an electronic petition. Anyone can put these together. All you need to do is, you know, go through this process where you put it up on the Parliament website, you get a member of Parliament to sponsor it, which means that they're going to introduce it into Parliament, which doesn't necessarily mean that they agree with it, but they're willing to do that role. And, you know, there's lots of these all the time. And we've, you know, worked with members of Parliament to sponsor similar petitions about supporting Palestinian children under occupation. Or there's lots of petitions around ending arms sales to Saudi Arabia or all sorts of things. So this is one that they're rolling out as sort of this big deal, I guess. And something to say about this is that, you know, once you get a certain amount of signatures, then it gets introduced into Parliament, and then the government has to respond officially, although usually those responses are just kind of the usual canned talking points. Usually you don't actually get anything significant. Certainly it doesn't force the government to actually act on what you're calling for.
Right.
So it's a very routine. So it's kind of strange to see kind of this big press release about it. But I mean, what's interesting is that it's putting forward this idea that they've been talking about for a while, that the government should use the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism and apply it to Canada's funding for non-governmental organizations. And so basically this definition, which conflates criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism, and to say, well, if any of these NGOs violate that definition, we should no longer be giving them money. And I know that one big campaign that the pro-Israel group Lawi NGO Monitor has been talking about has been trying to get the government to defund groups like the United Church of Canada or Kairos Canada and some of these others, because they partnered with a Palestinian women's group that supports a boycott of Israel. So just on that grounds of partnering with an organization that just thinks that you should boycott the government that is occupying them, that on that ground, they're saying that would violate the IHRA and therefore Canada should not be funding these things. And that's along the lines of what this is pushing for.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're all against anti-Semitism. And so B'nai B'rith is sort of couching it in this language as if there's this huge problem. But in fact, as you dig in, just as you pointed out, Michael, you know, it's situations like that with the United Church. And just to be clear, that the Canadian government isn't giving money to the United Church, I don't know, build churches in Canada. The United Church runs, you know, partnership programs, humanitarian programs. So you know, it's sort of in this charitable fashion that these things take place. My feeling as well, my fear as well, B'nai B'rith Canada and CEJA, the Center for Israel Jewish Affairs, have for years and years and years tried to stop Canada from giving funds to UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees. And again, one of the complaints about that these groups make about UNRWA is that, you know, their members, employees of UNRWA are Hamas members, or they support Hamas and so on. And so you just, you know, if you were to look up B'nai B'rith Canada and UNRWA, you'd find all these stories where they're attacking UNRWA. Of course, UNRWA provides primarily education and health services to Palestinian refugees. And UNRWA and independent auditors have repeatedly, you know, investigated these complaints that UNRWA has links to Hamas or whatever it might be, and has repeatedly, you know, proven them wrong, or repeatedly shown that no, these are th- these are simply attacks by hostile entities. So really disappointing. It's really, I guess, given my earlier points, really seeming to make a huge issue of something where there's really no issue there. I guess we were sort of also struck in their description of this. Michael, I certainly share your comment about how these petitions are really quite minor initiatives. And B'nai B'rith, in the second paragraph of the press release, you know, B'nai B'rith says, we will handle the technical and media aspects of this petition. And of course, as if this is, you know, weeks and weeks of work, where it really takes about 5 minutes to set one of these things up on the parliamentary website. And the other thing that struck me is that they say respected, B'nai B'rith Canada is supporting a group of respected community leaders. And they actually identify these community leaders that they're referring to further down in their thing. First of all, it's important to say that when you do one of these petitions, because we have done several of them ourselves, CJPME, you're actually required to have, I think, a minimum of 3 or 4 initial signing members. You have to have sort of 3 or 4 initial people to actually set them up. So you have to have at least 3 or 4 people to actually launch one of these. So they went out to a few people. They got someone they call David Mattis. They call him a renowned lawyer and human rights activist. It's another way of saying he's just the legal counsel for B'nai B'rith Canada. Then they have 3 organizations. And I obviously have nothing against these organizations, but they are not big organizations or significant organizations by any stretch of the imagination. There's an organization, an Iranian-Canadian organization called Justice 88. I went to their website. As far as I could tell, their most recent activity was in 2019, so not a very active group. Another group, the Filipino Family Association of Quebec, B'nai B'rith Canada links to them, and all it links to is a Facebook page, which has 430 likes. Again, not particularly impressive, not something you'd expect to see if these people are cited as respected community leaders or important community leaders. And finally, the Plymouth Caribbean Cultural Association. There, the B'nai B'rith Canada press statement links to, again, a Facebook page, which has 516 likes. So I think if they had really wanted to get respected leaders and respected organizations, this isn't a list that impresses me particularly. I think they could have gone after far, far more impressive community organizations and far more respected leaders if they could actually get people in these respected positions. There's one or two other points I want to make, but let me give you a chance to jump in here too, Michael. Anything else you'd like to point out about this?
Well, I think when we're talking about the aims of this petition, again, which is defunding organizations that criticize Israel, frankly. There's this interesting quote from the national director of B'nai B'rith that kind of spells this out a little bit. When they're talking about the kinds of NGOs that would no longer be funded, he says, for example, NGOs that promote anti-Semitism mislabel Israeli cities as Palestinian and encourage children to wage war against Jews, that those would be ineligible for Canadian public funding. So I agree that NGOs that promote anti-Semitism should not get funding. What does this mislabel Israeli cities as Palestinian? What is he referring to?
Does that mean if you call Jerusalem Al-Quds, which is the Arabic way of saying Jerusalem, does that mean, and if you work with an organization that refers to the city where they live in their native language, that you will be denied funding?
Or maybe they're talking about East Jerusalem. If you talk about East Jerusalem as Palestinian rather than as, you know, the United Capital of Israel or whatever, are they saying that would be anti-Semitic according to this? It's just incredibly vague and seems very out of place here. And then this idea of encouraging children to wage war against Jews just strikes me as just a terrible anti-Palestinian trope about... Yeah. Children under occupation. And again, I don't know who they're referring to with that. What NGO, what Canadian NGO is giving money to encourage children to wage war against Jews? What problem is this? Can they identify an organization that is doing this?
That's right.
I don't know. Right. It's just absurd. But it speaks to this broader goal of just a huge, sweeping, I guess, interpretation of this, so that any organization that is doing any, that basically is partnering with any Palestinian organizations on the ground would, if this was policy, they would be at risk of having their funding taken away.
Yeah, or feel intimidated. That's right. And again, there's this effort to building on what you just said, there's sort of this effort to conflate the state of Israel with the Jewish people as a whole. You know, when I hear about Palestinian children throwing rocks at people, they're throwing rocks at Israeli occupation soldiers. They're not just saying, oh, there's a Jew, let's lob a rock over at that Jew. They are fighting. They are taking, you know, a very natural sort of act, or very, you know, embodying their anger towards this occupation army and lashing out in the only way that they can. But I don't think there's anything that soldier is a Druze soldier, so I'm not going to throw a rock at that soldier. I'm just going to figure out who are the Jewish ones and throw rocks at them. So in any case, I mean, this whole thing is ridiculous. And that's sort of the point of this, podcast, is to point out how ridiculous these things are. Our next story is again from the B'nai B'rith Canada, of course, all in our B'nai Canada. This came out a few weeks ago. B'nai B'rith Canada was after the Montreal city mayor, Valerie Plante. Apparently, a Montreal city councillor liked a Facebook post that, of course, in this B'nai B'rith press release, that it's a Facebook post that promotes the anti-Semitic boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. Of course, you actually look at the post, and it was actually a post by our friends, Independent Jewish Voices Canada, an event where they were actually talking about they're talking about BDS and supporting Palestinian human rights and so on and so forth. But it's actually a Jewish organization, Independent Jewish Voices Canada. And so a Montreal city councillor associated with Valerie Plante's party actually liked a post. And as a smoking gun, if you actually go to the B'nai B'rith page on this, they actually, somebody has taken a screenshot where they have hovered their mouse over the like symbol underneath the post. And they've actually shown that the name of this Montreal city councillor, Alexander Norris, actually appears in the people that have liked it. So yes, you heard me right. B'nai B'rith Canada is policing the Facebook likes of Montreal city councillors. Pretty ridiculous, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I think they put out two different press releases, basically like demanding answers from the mayor of Montreal for a councillor in her party liking a Facebook post by Independent Jewish Voices. Pretty absurd. And there was even a story in the Canadian Jewish News about it. But to this guy's credit, the councillor, Alexander Norris, he gave a statement standing by his Facebook like. He said, "My firm opposition to all forms of anti-Semitism, bigotry, racism, and intolerance is a matter of public record, as is my support for the rights of Jews, Palestinians, and indeed all peoples to live in peace, free from violence, military occupation, or human rights violations." And then going on about how councillors have a right to take personal stance on human rights issues at home and around the world. So good on Alexander Norris. And yeah, pretty funny about this being a multi-week campaign for B'nai B'rith.
Yeah. You know, and this reminds me of, and this is probably something we'll say again and again as we do these lobby roundup podcasts, there's always all this innuendo. You know, there's all this sort of, we're not going to talk about what actually BDS says, but we're just going to say that it's anti-Semitic, right? And they don't actually sort of dig into why is it anti-Semitic. And if you actually hear actually someone explain it, it's very obscure. Maybe we should talk about at some point, you know, it's actually the BDS, the BDS movement's objective for justice for Palestinian refugees, which would include either the right to return to their homes or the right to compensation as per resolution, UN resolution 194. And so that is supposedly why the pro-Israel groups say that BDS is anti-Semitic. But I just don't think that's a very compelling argument for why BDS is anti-Semitic. And as Omar Barghouti, one of the founders of the BDS movement, said, look, you know, if the BDS movement threatens the very existence of the state of Israel, what does that say about the state of Israel in terms of if giving the Palestinians their rights somehow threatens the state of Israel? What does that say about the state of Israel? It in no way threatens the state of Israel. It's simply there to provide the assert the human rights of the Palestinians. But again, coming back to this point about innuendo that I was going to make, which is, you know, there's all this, you know, they don't explain how it is. It's just you somehow like this thing and this thing is anti-Semitic. And will you renounce anti-Semitism and therefore renounce BDS? And it's, you know, again and again, in this press statement from B'nai B'rith, they said, the mayor of Côte Saint-Luc, Michael Brownstein, requested the Montreal City Council clarify its position while rejecting BDS as anti-Semitic. So it's not like, let's have a chat, let's have a discussion about the BDS movement, what it says, what our position should be. No, the whole premise is, can we all agree that we need to vote it down because it's anti-Semitic? You know, there's never any open discussion. Another thing that that I find, and we'll see this in a number of these stories that we'll be talking about today, you know, B'nai B'rith will often say, this movement, well, I'm quoting here from their statement, this movement, referring to the BDS movement, this movement has been rejected by the federal government. Well, what does that mean exactly? Are they referring to the 2016 motion in parliament? Do you know what they're referring to, Michael, in terms of this movement has been rejected by the federal government?
Yeah, it's probably the 2016 motion in parliament to condemn BDS, but I mean also the government itself, whether Justin Trudeau or whoever the foreign affairs minister is, often say things like they reject BDS and compare it with anti-Semitism. So yeah, there are a few things they could be pointing to there.
Yeah, but I guess what bothers me a little bit, you know, and that's something they're going to constantly repeat. Well, if it's so bad, you know, why did parliament choose just to do a motion rather than actually pass a law? Well, because if you pass a law, it would be thrown out because it isn't anti-Semitic. And so, and actually in 2016, there was this political game. It was actually the conservatives who introduced it, and they challenged basically the Trudeau liberals to either vote with it or vote against it. It was sort of this competition to see who is more blindly supportive of the state of Israel, and it was some that sort of thing. But again, that's something that's repeated. And I guess what bothers me about all this is that there's never talk of the substance of BDS. It's always this they want this blanket ban without any actually discussion about what it's all about. Anything else we should say about this particular story, Michael?
No, I don't think so.
All right, let's move on. The next story we have is story. Can you tell us a little bit, B'nai B'rith Canada, the headline is B'nai B'rith Canada submits analysis in advance of UN Commission report. So the UN Human Rights Commission has commissioned a UN Commission of Inquiry to look into the situation in Palestine, Israel, right?
Yeah, last year, following the events in May with Israel's bombing of Gaza, the UN Human Rights Council voted to establish a commission of inquiry to look into human rights violations in the occupied Palestinian territories and Israel. And this is something that is exciting for many reasons. It has a fairly broad scope, so it's not looking only at events that or activities in the occupied territory, but also it potentially could look at human rights violations for that affect Palestinian citizens of Israel as well, and maybe even refugees. So it's going to be interesting to see if anything comes from that report. But B'nai B'rith Canada is responding to the open call for submissions, and they put together this report. Their senior legal counsel wrote this huge rant, essentially, which B'nai B'rith is saying is a robust analysis, but it's just really embarrassing, honestly, if you read through it. The point of this report is to suggest that the root cause of conflict in the region is actually anti-Zionism, And that is to say, in the way that they're interpreting it, that all of the criticism about Israel has nothing to do with Israel's actions, but is only because Israel is Jewish. And if Israel was an Arab state, there'd be no criticism whatsoever. And so that's essentially the argument that this explores in a very really annoying way, a sort of roundabout language. It's very, you looked at it a little bit. It's a very unimpressive report. And there's this huge section disproving even the term occupied Palestinian territory.
Attempting to disprove or suggesting. Right. Go ahead. Right. We can't let this end disproving, but go ahead.
Right. Yeah. But attempts to suggest, or it's not disprove, but disapproves, basically says that by using the term occupied Palestinian territory, this commission of inquiry is already taking sides against Israel when, if you look at it, I mean, is the West Bank even occupied? Is Gaza even occupied? Goes into all of these sort of kind of hypothetical questions to raise concerns that, maybe it actually isn't occupied, suggesting that, because Palestinians signed the Oslo Accords in the 90s, that means that actually they consent to Israeli presence in the West Bank, and therefore it can't be occupied. All of these things are thrown out there. It's really really an embarrassing document, but it really, this is consistent on the part of B'nai B'rith. Like, I do want people to know that this kind of stuff exists because, you know, despite how influential they are, their analysis is incredibly poor and amateurish, and it doesn't hold up to any scrutiny.
Yeah. It's just word games, just sort of like word games. I mean, if you read, I'll come back to the report that was submitted. But if you read their actual press statement, what is it here? Matas, who's the author, David Matas, again, the legal counselor for B'nai B'rith Canada. Matas says in his report, anti-Zionism does not exist because of the alleged behavior of some Israelis. Rather, anti-Zionism exists because of anti-Semitism. Anti-Zionists oppose the existence of Israel because Israel is Jewish and not Arab. If Israel were Arab, anti-Zionism would not exist, which is another way of, in a very complicated way of saying what you just said, is that if Israel were, anyway, it's just crazy. I mean, one thing just to clarify, and this is something that I looked up many years ago, Israel for decades argued that actually the West Bank and Gaza were not legally occupied. For folks that might know, the Fourth Geneva Conventions is actually international law, international humanitarian law, which applies under situations of war and occupation. And so people were saying, look, Israel, you're not respecting the Fourth Geneva Conventions. And Israel would say, well, we don't have to because these territories aren't actually occupied. So therefore, the Fourth Geneva Conventions don't actually apply. They're not militarily occupied. And so the international community just got sick of that. And so in 2001, the high contracting parties to the Fourth Geneva Convention actually got together in Geneva and they voted. And it was actually a unanimous vote that, in fact, the Fourth Geneva Convention does apply to the situation in the West Bank and Gaza. And so, in fact, Israel is legally an occupying power, and they do legally have obligations to protect the civilian population in the West Bank and Gaza in a number of different ways. So, yeah, it's just very unimpressive as a report. And, you know, I guess, you know, and in B'nai B'rith's press statement on this, they say, one of the things they say, every minute, every dollar spent on this commission is a minute not spent on the human rights violations in China, Russia, Venezuela, Eritrea, and many other violated countries who voted in favor of the formation of this commission. You know, I think, Michael, you probably share my opinion. I think all human rights violations should be investigated. So it's not like sort of either or. We can do all of them, you know. But I think we do have to also bring a dose of reality here. None of these other countries have been accused of being apartheid states and having, you know, imposed literally over years and decades an apartheid regime. Yeah, there are plenty of human rights violators out there, and they should all be investigated. So it's not like by investigating Israel, somehow we're prevented from investigating others. You know, and again, I guess what bothers me about this, you know, why is it that they just won't accept that this criticism is about Israel's human rights abuses? Why can't they just sort of face up to that and say, you know what, we need to do better?
Yeah. And when it comes to this idea that it's like picking on Israel, I mean, this same body just voted to establish another commission of inquiry, the exact same process, but into Russia's actions in Ukraine.
Right.
So actually, this committee exists for states to investigate all sorts of things. And they do have regular reports on conflicts and human rights violations in other countries. So it just falls flat completely.
Yeah, absolutely. So last story that we wanted to cover, and again, another story from today. B'nai B'rith has been busy today on March 8th. A story came out, University of Toronto is withholding fees from the Graduate Student Union over the GSU's for its BDS support. I guess you've looked into this a little bit and you've actually been in touch with the GSU, Michael. Would you want to summarize this story, what actually happened and what the upshot is?
Well, it goes back a little bit, but basically the Grad Student Union at the U of T 10 years ago voted to create this BDS caucus. So a permanent committee to promote BDS activity and campaigns in support of Palestinian rights. And for the last number of years, there have been a number of different campaigns to try to get the grad students to drop that committee on the grounds, you know, these complaints that, well, BDS is anti-Semitic, it's discriminating against Jewish students, therefore we need to get rid of this committee, essentially. And there was this administrative report that came out last year basically suggesting that this was an administrative body, but it was run by students, or students were in the official roles. They came up with this report saying that, well, the BDS caucus, this should actually be an opt-in situation. Students shouldn't have to be forced to pay for this activity. And again, mischaracterizing BDS entirely as discrimination based on nationality rather than targeting individuals and institutions for complicity in occupation and human rights violations. So through this time, the grad students at U of T have decided that they're standing by the democratic will of their members who voted for this committee, that they're not going to let the administration basically undermine their own democratic decisions, and that they support this BDS caucus. And so my understanding, and I'm not exactly sure all of the preceding developments leading to this moment, but very recently the university administration is now threatening to withhold a portion of grad student membership fees, basically to try to force them to get rid of this BDS caucus. And so, I mean, it's a huge overreach. Student unions are independent from university administrations. They have independence and autonomy, and this is a huge overreach to try to essentially punish them for supporting BDS. And so I don't know, I think as of this time, the position of the grad students said that this is the democratic will and they're standing by it, but I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen next, if there's anything they can do to stop the university from withholding their fees.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to put this into context, I mean, the B'nai B'rith, again, the exaggeration and the misdirection in this stuff. So B'nai B'rith makes it look like this huge disaster for the Graduate Student Union. Indeed, $10,000 are going to be withheld, at least until this is challenged in some way. But we actually looked up the budget of the U of T Graduate Student Union, and the budget is actually $14 million. So $10,000 is 1% of 1 million. And the GSU's budget is actually 14 million. So it's 1/14 of 1% is the degree to which the U of T GSU has been penalized here. Obviously, it's not something we're happy about, but it certainly hasn't crippled the GSU and hasn't brought the GSU to its knees. And as you say, Michael, as you point out, this was sort of brought about and sort of a back, basically the administration sort of is the judge and jury and sentencer on this, right? That they created this complaint and resolution council, which they sort of put it out there as if it's a student-run thing, but it's actually an arm of the administration, and they make this decision, and they decide on the penalty and so on. But in fact, it's actually a very minor penalty, and maybe there's an agreement behind the scenes that, like, okay, you know, we'll just do this, and you will sort of, you know, put this issue to rest and have with a penalty which is entirely insignificant. In terms of BDS actually somehow being discriminatory against Jewish students, Michael, you mentioned to me earlier the Harvard University sort of exploration of that issue. Do you want to describe that briefly?
Well, the Harvard Law Review did a pretty comprehensive review of this issue, looking at the U.S. anti-BDS bills a couple of years ago, and essentially found that on no grounds can BDS be considered actually discriminatory for a lot of reasons. And people can look that up. It's a really interesting read. But it definitely throws cold water on these claims that BDS is somehow discriminating against Israeli or Jewish students. That's absolutely not the case. There's a lot of other legal research into this, but it's definitely a false claim completely. And on, you know, obviously the amount of money in this case isn't that significant. I think it's, from what I've read, it sounds like the university is basically trying to come up with a number that represents how much money the BDS caucus might be spending on BDS activity and then withholding that portion. Regardless of sort of the amount, the principle is pretty severe. It's a pretty severe infringement on the ability of students to determine how they spend their money and the causes that they fight for. Imagine if a university withheld a portion of funding from grad students in the 80s for protesting against apartheid in South Africa. It would be a huge scandal. And it's something that we've just put out a press release condemning this it's an attack on student democracy. And the point is to us to undermine criticism and protest of Israeli human rights violations. So it's definitely, it also potentially sets a really dangerous precedent for other universities to follow. And so it's definitely something we'll keep following closely.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and I didn't mean to suggest that that we're okay with this. Absolutely not. But I also, by citing the actual budget of the GSU, I just sort of putting things into perspective. Absolutely. And you know, this is the U of T on the issue of sort of Israel-Palestine and manipulation by the pro-Israel lobby. It's just been constantly in the news the past few years. You know, the B'nai B'rit Canada press statement cited sort of something that they're calling an ongoing and wide-ranging anti-Semitism crisis at the U of T. But what they didn't, of course, that's their opinion, and they cite very skewed examples or they sort of present things in such a way that makes it sound like there's all these terrible things going on, making life very difficult for Jewish students and so on. But in fact, the U of T, because of an incident in the past few years, the U of T was actually sanctioned by the Canadian, so it's a University Teachers, CAUT, Canadian Association of University Teachers. They were actually censured, right? You know this better than that. They were censured by the CAUT because of the way the mishandling of a job offer to the U of T School of Law that was first offered and then rescinded. Because of the candidate's views on Israel-Palestine. So clearly the U of T has its own problems of being manipulated by pro-Israel interests. I don't know, Michael, do you want to say anything on this?
Yeah, I guess there's definitely a link here between how the U of T had handled that situation, where they essentially bowed to complaints by outside groups and by major donors to the university to drop this candidate who was incredibly well qualified for this international human rights position, but you know, there was this protest because she criticizes Israel's occupation. You know, there's definitely a pattern here with, you know, these kinds of examples showing that it's actually, there's incredible pressure to suppress, to suppress criticism of Israel, to there's tons of campaigns by B'nai B'rith and others to try to get the university to ban BDS activity completely, or activities like Israeli Apartheid Week. So I think this is the closest we've come in a while to seeing that kind of heavy-handed repression against students, but it's not coming from nowhere. There's definitely a context for this.
Yeah, absolutely. So that, I guess, is the last of the topics, and I think we've covered that pretty well. Anything else we want to say about this, Michael, on these different stories from B'nai B'rith Canada?
Well, I guess just, again, to note that these things are happening all the time, these behind-the-scenes maneuvers to try to, you know, whether they're targeting counselors for liking a Facebook post, or they're lobbying university administrators to withhold fees for students. You know, this lobbying is happening all the time, and there's just incredible influence. And, you know, people need to push back against that and stand up for the right to criticize Israel, and stand up for the right to support Palestinian human rights. And hopefully, with more education, with more advocacy, and more attention to these issues, more people will be willing to stand up to these kinds of initiatives. But part of this process is, I guess, just educating people about what is going on. And yeah, I'm sure there'll be lots more to say in future episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe one thing I should have pointed out near the beginning of the podcast is these pro-Israel lobby groups have incredible resources. I mean, we don't have obviously an inside view, but I did some research a few months ago, and my understanding is that B'nai B'rith, their annual budget is about $3 million. The Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs, their budget is about $11 million. Each of them have dozens of employees, literally dozens of employees, offices in several of Canada's major cities. As well as, and then you have Honest, what they call themselves, Honest Reporting Canada, so which covers sort of the media reporting. They're putting a lot of pressure on media. So these, in my mind, are three of the most important pro-Israel lobby groups. They're incredible resources, and as Michael just pointed out, they are constantly at work. When you have, you know, if CEJA has, as I understand it, 50 to 60 employees, that's a lot of people. And with a lot of focus, you know, they'll talk about, you know, I guess I saw a job offer by B'nai B'rith Canada not long ago. They're looking for a, you know, a Toronto community coordinator or something like that. You know, CJPME, we have three or four employees for all of Canada, you know, so the resources of these organizations are extremely big, and they have extreme reach. So we just need to do what we can to, of course, as Michael pointed out, to inform Canadians that this is going on, and also bring a grain of reality as well to the true implications of some of these stories that often seem just so powerful and so on. So I think we'll leave it at that. Appreciate folks tuning in here today, and we'll bring this sort of lobby roundup to our audiences every once in a while, and hopefully people enjoyed our chat here today. If you're a listener and you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe to our channel. We're on all the major audio podcast platforms. This podcast is a project of Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East, CJPME, and seeks to advance its mission to empower Canadians of all backgrounds to promote justice, development, and peace in the Middle East. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions about our podcast or our topics, please feel free to email us at info@cjpme.org. Thanks to all of our supporters who helped to make this podcast and all of CJPME's other activities possible. Thanks also to Madeline Moffat, our podcast engineer and consultant. We look forward to having all of you with us for our next podcast. Take care. We'll see you all again soon.
الأسمر اللون هل أسمر
So that's it for us for today. You're listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Until next time, I wish you a free, free Palestine.
This piano piece may well sound ordinary to you, until you realize that it was taught to young Chloe just last week by Janet, who's still teaching at 81. Seniors bring so much to Quebec. Let's recognize their contribution. A message from the Gouvernement de Québec.
I slept too little and drank too much. What's my diagnosis anyway? Get out of bed like this. Oh, Christ.
Rise and shine with CKUT 90.3 FM.
From 88 megahertz up to 108.
You've got this frequency. We're going to call you CKUT. You've got this frequency, 98.3. That frequency is what you're picking up when you tune that radio.
Very impressive.
You can sit on the moon and go back and pick up CKUT, clear as a bell.
Fascinating. Your analysis seems logical.
CKUT is on the air.